So what we do in couple therapy is I'm not going to change the pursuer as a pursuer. I'm not going to change the withdrawer as a withdrawer. But rather, can we soften the pursuer in his or her dance and perhaps help to encourage the withdrawer to come forward a little bit in this dance?
Yeah.
So that there's still that connection.
Dang, I'm like a pursuer. I see it now. Like, I'm definitely the pursuer.
I just realized it. I think I'm the withdrawer.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We talked about this before, though. Our partners are our opposite. Your husband and my husband are the opposites, and we are the opposites.
Hey, hey, and welcome to the 40s Formula, your go-to place for insightful discussions on navigating the 40s and thriving in this transformative decade.
We're your hosts, Jasmine and Amanda, two women that are passionate about exploring the challenges and adventures that come with turning 40 and what lies ahead. Teresa Pong is the founder and counseling director at The Relationship Room, a private practice that specializes in relationship and marriage counseling. A registered counselor and clinical supervisor with the Singapore Association for Counseling, she is also a certified emotionally focused couples therapist and was named one of Singapore's 40 over 40 inspiring women in 2023. Although she deals with a broad spectrum of concerns, such as depression and conflict management, her main area of expertise lies in aiding couples recover from affairs and infidelity. Over the past 14 years, she has journeyed alongside many hurting individuals, couples, and families, empowering them to turn disappointments to hope, enabling them to build positive connections with other people, and helping them to live their lives to the fullest every day. Teresa is happily married with one teenage daughter and spends her free time traveling, reading, and jogging. So no matter what you're striving for in your 40s, the likelihood is that you're doing it with someone, a partner, a spouse, a longtime companion, and navigating relationships in this decade is really crucial to feeling your best. Our guest today is Teresa Pong, registered counselor and founder of The Relationship Room, whose slogan is Restoring Hope, Reigniting Marriages, and Rebuilding Connections. I honestly want to talk about all three of those today. So thank you for coming, Teresa.
Thank you for this invitation.
Yeah, we're so happy to have you. And if we're being honest, or at least if I'm being honest, mm-hmm. the Reigniting Marriages piece feels so relevant to women in this decade.
Definitely.
Can you tell us about the common issues that you see that women feel like they need to reignite in their marriages and mm-hmm. how you help people do that?
Sure. You know, Amanda and Jasmine, you know, look at the typical Singaporean lady in her 40s today. I mean, she is most likely to be holding some kind of responsibilities or senior position in her company. And if she's married, I mean, she has also her priorities. Her kid, most likely, if I could guess, could be preparing for the big exam for their life, PSLE, or in secondary school. But at the same time, this lady also have other priorities, maybe financial commitments. And the other aspect is she got to take care of her elderly parents.
Correct.
And you know, medical fees in Singapore could be very expensive. Mm-hmm. So with so much on her plate, unfortunately, in the observations that I see, the marriage relationship will become the back burner.
Yeah.
So by the time she realizes that something is happening to the marriage, it could be late.
Yeah.
It could be accumulative years of pain and hurt and neglect. So by the time she realizes it, the marriage needs repair and it needs help. And that's what we do at the Relationship Room, to reignite the marriage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what are some tips you give women in that exact situation, right? Where it's like because I've definitely had days like this, right? Where it's like, I've been working all day, tending to the kids. We live with my husband's parents. So, you know, with the elderly all day.
Right.
And then I get home and it's like, I got nothing left to give. You know, what's an actionable tip you can give women to kind of, in those moments of like, I can't even fathom talking to, touching my partner. Like, how do we get past that?
Always tell yourself that give yourself as a priority, because without any energy, without any, you know, like space for yourself, you can't give to the rest. Now, one of the tips that I always share with my clients is, you know, they always say that, you know, I almost run from 6 a.m. in the morning, and by the time I go to bed, it's like 12 midnight or 11 p.m. But in between, there are spaces for you to take that break. Even for, let's say, transport from the office back to home, you could even rest during that time on the MRT or the public transport. And then so that when you reach home, you still have some energy left for your family.
Yeah. I love that. I follow an influencer. Okay. I'm not going to say her name because she's much younger than me. She calls it pockets of peace.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really nice way of saying it. It's like, even if it is an MRT ride.
Yes.
It could be a 5-minute meditation. It could be.
Definitely.
Right. So it could be a pocket of peace if you carve it out.
Correct.
Yeah. That's a really good tip.
One of the things that I quite like to do, and it's actually with my husband, is I like to pick him up in the car from the MRT station. Mm. And that gives us maybe 15 minutes of just the two of us sitting in the car. So he's got nowhere to run.
He has to listen.
He has to listen. And then I can, you know, talk to him, maybe offload my day or whatever it is. But it's just that time without the kids. I know that no one else is going to be there. Mm. And, you know, we can have this conversation about, you know, what it is that needs to be done, or, you know, how his day went or how my day went. And I find that kind of helps to give us a little bit of a, I don't know, recharge almost, because otherwise you're always looking for, when can I sit down? Because I know for a fact, if he came home by himself, when he gets home, he wants to eat dinner. And then it's like the TV comes on. And then it's like, then we're going to bed. And it's like, when do you get the time to actually just sit and talk?
You know what? This is so beautiful. You know, it's so intentional to just carve out that 15 minutes precious time.
Yeah.
That's great tip.
And I think, you know, when you just said like just 15 minutes or just an MRT ride or just a car ride, I think, you know, in my work with people with exercise, it's the same thing, right? They think it has to be an hour of dedicated gym time or it's nothing. No, it could be 15 minutes of walking and that's good enough.
Yeah, even 1 minute on the plank.
Yes, exactly. So we can treat our relationships the same way. Like a small dose is better than none.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's cumulative small gestures.
Yeah. Small gestures. I love that. You know, and speaking of small gestures, you mentioned in your bio that you were someone who suffered from recurrent disappointments, small and large, right? And that that's something that led you onto this career path. Can you tell us a bit more about how you felt that you were trapped in this cycle of kind of negativity, disappointment, and how you came through it?
Sure. You know, it's like as an Asian adult growing up in a traditional Chinese family, the image of what I call the success actually comes with three factors. For example, I mean, the first one is your university, you know, education, you know, achievements, your job, your career, you know, you're expected to be joining a large corporation. And then there's this image of what a successful family is. You must have happy children and having a good lifestyle.
Yeah.
So growing up, I managed to achieve the first two. I graduated with a degree. I got a job, I would say, with a, well, large corporation in Singapore. But when it comes to relationship, I didn't know. I didn't have the skills. And I was in and out of many what I call toxic relationships that left me feeling very broken. And every time when I come out of a broken relationship, that makes me feel like I have just lost that part of self-esteem. So by the time I hit the 20s, the mid-20s, I realized that I'm actually experiencing symptoms of depression. Yeah. And also at that point of time, I realized that I didn't enjoy the job that I'm in. I mean, yes, it pays me well. Sure. It's a nice company, but I didn't enjoy the job. So with all this crashing in, a friend actually, you know, recommended me to try counseling. Now, at that point of time, counseling was something that's not spoken very often, unlike now. So, but that actually started me a 7-year journey of rediscovering myself and doing inner work to heal my, you know, the pain, the hurts that I went through. I rebuilt my self-esteem. And by the end of the 7-year journey, I met my current husband. Yeah. But it was also through this 7-year journey, I rediscovered myself what success really means. It's not about, you know, like, earning big bucks or being working in a very prestigious company, but really doing something that you believe for and you enjoy. So I actually went to further my studies in counseling. And this is also when I actually took a 60% pay cut to start my career from ground zero.
That had to be tough.
Yeah, but this journey went very fast. I mean, now I'm into my almost 15th year in this journey.
Wow.
So time flies.
You know it was the right move.
But with the encouragement of my husband. Yeah.
I heard someone say once, and I'm going to be honest, I can't remember who said it, but expectation is almost the root to disappointment. So, you know, if you're expecting something, you're very likely to be disappointed. Do you feel that people are always expecting something from their relationships or something from their partners, which will constantly lead to disappointment? And is there anything that we can do to kind of help manage that?
Sure.
Amanda, I think we need to let our listeners know that we don't just use the Meat Club because they're a sponsor of the show. They're a sponsor of the show because we love what they bring.
Oh, it is so true, Jasmine. It has been over a year with the Meat Club, and I can confidently say they have made cooking at home so much easier. Their grass-fed beef, organic chicken, and wild-caught seafood are the best quality you get in Singapore. And let's not forget, it's ethically sourced.
Yes, and beyond the quality, their subscription service is next level. When you subscribe, you'll unlock $140 worth of rewards, like on your second delivery, 2 exclusive Meat Club hats.
By your fourth delivery, a restaurant-grade chef's knife.
On your sixth delivery, a beautiful wooden chopping board.
And by your eighth delivery, a $30 voucher to use on your favorites. It's like they are rewarding you for making healthy choices for your family.
And it doesn't just stop there. The subscription model is perfect for busy families. Just click, set, and forget. Plus, you'll get up to 15% off your groceries with every subscription order. No last-minute dashes to the store.
The Meat Club really takes the taste of Australia and New Zealand right to your doorstep, making healthy living easy and stress-free.
And because you're part of the Forties Formula family, use code TFF12 for $12 off your first order with no minimum spend. Just visit themeatclub.com.sg to subscribe now.
And follow them on Instagram at themeatclubsg for exclusive content, cooking tips, and special offers. The Meat Club, rewarding families like yours with premium quality every single time.
Now, back to the chat.
Expectation. I think the most important thing that I want to highlight here is whose expectations. Mm. A lot of times these expectations come from the society, our parents, yes, our friends, because we so fear judgment and criticisms. But if the expectations is coming from us, and especially when we know that this expectation is coming from what I call a very secure self, that we know what we want, we won't fall into disappointment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the secure self, I think that is something that women in their 40s need to hear.
Definitely.
Right? Is that it is very hard to be depressed, disappointed, anxious if you're truly secure in yourself.
Yeah.
But it takes work. You don't emerge from your 30s suddenly secure.
Right.
You know, after 2 decades of insecurity.
Yeah. Yeah. You have seen decades? Women in 50s and 60s still feeling very insecure.
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you get women to find that secure self? I can't say get. How do you encourage women to look for a more secure sense of self?
I work with many individuals, especially individuals who have setbacks from dating relationships.
Yeah.
And so by the time they come to see me, they were at their lowest point in their life. So what I do is actually less... be brave. Let's face your vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
Let's face what you don't want to see and feel it. And then we will work together how we can change that narrative so that it builds you and make you feel more secure. So for example, all right, I have a client who shared with me that, you know, Teresa, I'm very unlucky. I'm very unfortunate because I'm born in a family where my father passed away when I was very young. I was being, you know, like put from family to family. So she carried this narrative that I'm just, you know, bad luck.
Mm.
And so after working a few sessions, she actually, you know, shifted in her narrative. She said that I'm not so unfortunate because even if my father passed away at my age of 12 years old, I spent a good solid 12 years with him.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what we are looking for. Little victories and little success would help to change the narrative.
Yeah. And that's, you know, the reframing bit I think is so important because that... as you tell that tale, right, it's heartbreaking. You think of a 12-year-old girl losing her father. It's about the worst thing you could think of.
Yeah.
But like you said, 12 years with a father, right, versus 0 versus 5. I mean, this is at least something. So I think anytime we're facing this kind of persistent narrative of negativity, and we all tell ourselves these stories, right, that are damaging to our self-image, you must find a way to reframe it, or it will haunt you forever.
But before we go into the reframing part, which I would say that yes, no, we have to do the reframing, but we also have to go through the emotional closure. Yeah. That is, we work through our emotions, we find healing, we accept what has happened.
Yeah.
And that's where the reframing will come in.
Have you had a client really struggle with closure on some issue, like where like she just can't face it?
Yes, especially when it comes to unforgiveness.
Mm. You know, give us an example, yeah.
So for example, I remember a few years ago, I was actually working in the community as a counselor. So there's this lady, you know, she is actually a cleaner. She came to see me. She said that, you know, the company who hired her decided to ask her to go because she's not doing a great job. And she felt so upset with the person who asked her to go. And she couldn't forgive. It took us, you know, a lot of months to work with her. Until one day she decided that, hey, no, I'm not going to get this feeling to, you know, eat me up. I want to move on.
Yeah, but she had to decide it.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
It's also because at that point of time, the circumstances have changed. She got another job. So maybe it helps her in that process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like when something takes such a big hit to your sense of identity, right? Like she obviously felt passionately about her job.
Yeah.
So it's like she couldn't take a hit that was like related to that bit of her identity. Mm. Oh, man.
You spoke about some of the things that women tend to deal with when it comes to the 40s.
Mm.
What issues do you see sort of from, let's say, the husband side that tend to maybe cause an imbalance in a relationship? So is there anything that comes up again and again, like from the husband's viewpoint, not about his wife, but, you know, about his wife?
Exactly what the women in the 40s face, the men in the 40s will also face the same. But they are actually having even more pressure because especially in Asian context, the men in the 40s are expected to be successful, to be the main breadwinner. Even if my spouse like lost a job or decided to be a stay-at-home mom, I am expected to actually go through all these pressures or stress at work just to make sure that there's bread on the table. Now, men in this age also shares with me that what they're struggling with is whether can they find somebody, especially the spouse, to understand what they go through. What they're experiencing is when things happen, not at home, the wife or the spouse will actually put the focus on the children first. Children will come first. Husband comes second. And a lot of times they felt neglected in the relationships.
I heard somewhere that men want to be admired and women want to be adored. And I felt that was so pertinent because I kind of feel like the men, you know, like they might feel I'm doing all of this for my family.
Mm-mm.
And they want their wives to see that what they're doing is their way of, I guess, showing love, you know, that this I'm doing for you, even if it is staying late at work.
Yeah. This is the attachment need. They want to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
They want to know that I put in so much effort. Please see what I'm doing for the family.
Yeah.
So how much of your attachment style, I guess, is related to the kind of relationship that you're in?
Mm-hmm.
And does there tend to be a mismatch sometimes? And how can you work on that?
Right. Each of us have different needs, all right? Some of us want to feel loved. Some of us want to feel adored. Right? Some of us want to feel like, hey, we are appreciated. We are this person who is able to provide for the family. Whatever the needs is, the most important here is how can we get the couples to see each other's needs and respond to them. A lot of times, you know, it's like the conflicts that they bring to the counseling room is, they feel like, are we doing a keeping score here? So for example, the husband say, okay, you know, I work until 9 p.m. And the wife say, you know, it's like I work also until 9 p.m. So we have this comparison.
Yeah.
And that is how it created a block between both of them, and they are not able to connect. And when there's no connection, this is when the relationship will spiral.
And how do you, like, you know, so I know that on your website, you always talk about vulnerability and connection.
Correct.
Right? Those are the two kind of building blocks of relationships. When you have this kind of tete-a-tete, right? Where it's like, I work till nine. Or I work till nine. Well, I'm home all day with the kids, right? Like, you know, so like, ding, ding.
I slept for 6 hours.
Yeah, I slept for 4.5 because I was up with the baby or whatever. Yeah. You know, how do you help couples get past that where it just is that constant keeping score?
All right. I mean, this is a very good question because I got asked this many times.
Yeah, because I'm sure it happens. It happens in my relationship for sure.
All right. Is definitely sleep.
Okay, first of all, we connect on vulnerability. So whenever we are able to share vulnerability, we connect. Now, having said that, vulnerability is not about telling each other your life history, right? But it's more of, can we focus on our emotions and our experiences? So for example, let me just give you an example where not both the partners are working until 9 p.m. Instead of focusing on the content, which is like, hey, you know, I work until 9 p.m., I work until 10 p.m., then you have this fight. Perhaps one of them can say that, you know, I feel so tired. I've been spending long hours and I don't like it. It's just very simple, you know, experience and emotions. Yeah. And that create, you know, like a connection. And especially if their partner can validate and say, yeah, I get it. You know, you work whole day. You don't get to see the children. Mm. You know, you feel like it's taken so much of you away from the family. And that's the start of the connection.
Yeah. It's like unpack the complaint.
Correct.
What's the emotion?
So a lot of times in a counseling session, when I hear contents like a comparison, I try to hear what is the pain? What's the need behind this comparison?
Yeah. And that, I think that's something we can all remember because I know that I tend to, you know, because my partner and I, it's not often work-related because we work together. So that doesn't really come up a lot. But it is a lot of like, time kind of with the kids, like who's doing what for the kids, right? And I'm always feeling like I'm the one doing more for the kids. But he's like, but I provide, you know, it's like we have this whole back and forth. So
but
I think
you're
right.
Can I just pause here?
Yes.
I just wanted to say something. You know, that conversation that I demonstrated just now, it'll be good if you both of you can speak during the 15 minutes in the car or in the kitchen. But I also noticed in my practices that some of these conversations take place in the office pantry with another colleague. And that's how it gets started off with infidelity or extramarital affair. Yeah. Because we all connect on vulnerability.
Yeah.
So I also want to encourage, you know, taking this opportunity to encourage couples, let's draw boundaries and let's protect our marriage.
I love that. I have always, I don't know if I'm just like a Pollyanna. But, and again, because my work situation is so different because we work together, but in a business that we own, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just the two of us. I always am uncomfortable by this term work wife, work husband.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my work wife. And it's like, if my husband had a work wife, you better bet I'd have an issue with that. That's not okay.
Yeah.
You know, and even if he had a work husband, meaning like a male colleague that he felt comfortable confiding in, it's like, it's almost like you should confide in me.
Yeah, because it's
like,
the emotional, it's the emotional connection, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like it's going to sound, all right, is that more cheating rather than the physical side?
Because it almost feels like that
connection should be between you two as your husband and wife. That's
correct.
Something that you should have,
as
opposed to, you know, being able to open up and say your sort of innermost secrets to someone else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different, you know, if they're just talking to, I don't know, a guy friend or something.
Yeah.
You know, then that's it out.
The base relationship is friend.
Yeah.
But like if you're taking a work colleague aside and giving him your deepest heart and soul, that feels weird to me.
Yeah. And that's dangerous because the more connected you are with this person outside the marriage, the more you're going to get disconnected in your own marriage.
I hear that. I hear that so much. And I think, you know, what's your opinion on this, Teresa? It's like we were talking about, like, we're busy, right? We got kids, this, the other. There's only so much to give.
Yeah.
And if you're giving any element of that emotional energy to another person, you have even less to give to your partner.
Teresa, you mentioned infidelity. Mm-hmm. Now, in a situation where, say, there is infidelity, is there a way of coming back from that for a husband and wife to be able to, I guess, rekindle their marriage or just, you know, be back in a maybe a better place than they were before? Is there a way of doing that?
All right. First of all, we have to determine what kind of infidelity is it. So, for example, infidelity can be in a form of just one night stands or maybe like, you know, checking out for those sleazy massages or maybe pornography. Now, that will come under an umbrella we call sexual addiction. So that's easier to deal with, because what we know is most of our spouses who go for this kind of infidelity is just going for that process, that euphoria or the dopamine search, that's all. And then we just need to find how can we help them to manage, to find a healthy coping mechanism. That's easier to work with. But what is harder to work with is what I call the extramarital affair, where there is a connection. Now, as I mentioned just now, when there's a connection with someone outside, we need to know how long this connection is. If anything that's around maybe a year or less, it's easier to work with. But anything more than a year of connection, the challenge is here. So I will always tell my couples that, you know, don't see couple counseling at this stage as trying to fix your marriage, but rather let's use the marriage counseling that journey just to seek clarity, to find out how did both of you come to this stage. And then both of you decide whether is this marriage for both of you. And if both of you decide that, yes, it is for us, then we'll move on to the next stage where we'll work and see how we can restructure the interaction between the both of you to strengthen and build the marriage. But a lot of times, sometimes they'll feel like, I'm sorry, I don't think my heart is here anymore in this marriage. Then this is the time where I will have to work with the couples to grieve over the loss of this marriage. Yeah.
And is that common?
Yes, it is common. But I will say that, you know, let's not give up hope. As long as both of you are willing to come and spend time, you know, on working on this marriage, going for couple therapy, you know, it's like it is still worth it to fight for your marriage. Yeah.
And would you say, and again, I'm sure every practice is different, just like every couple is different.
Yes.
But when a couple does come to you for counseling, the outcomes, would you say more so they stay together after infidelity or more so they don't?
Okay, generally, because I use this framework called the emotionally focused couples therapy. Now, research has said that couples who have gone through this therapy, 75% of the couples have actually moved from distress to recovery.
Oh, wow.
75%.
That's wonderful.
Big number, actually. Yeah. It's bigger than I thought.
But then having said that, there's still a 25%.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's still 1 in 4, so it's not small.
Correct. So when couples come, I will always go for the 75% until we reach a stage and say that, hey, this is not for us, Teresa. And I respect the decision. Yeah. Yeah.
And is there one partner more than the other partner who sort of will say this is not working? Like, for example, let's say it's an extramarital affair. And let's say one of the spouse was in a long-term relationship with somebody else. Is it usually the person who was in usually the person who was having the affair, or is it usually the person who the other person?
Mean, generally, I would say that the one, or what I call the injured partner here.
Yeah.
All right, the injured partner still want to fight for the relationship.
Okay.
It is what I call the offending partner, especially if this offending partner has been in that extramarital relationship for long. He or she will most likely want to really reconsider the marriage. And a lot of times they do think about whether, do I still want to stay in this marriage?
Is it almost like a pros and cons as to who is going to be the better long-term partner, I guess? You know, like, is it my husband or wife that I've been with for, I don't know, 10 years versus this new boyfriend or girlfriend that I've been with for, you know, 2 years.
Right. So it's a lot of times it's all back to this attachment need. So for example, the offending partner will say that, you know, in the other relationship, that person knows me well. That person, you know, journeys with me the ups and downs. Whereas in my own relationship, my own marriage, my own spouse doesn't seem to understand me. Yeah, doesn't seem to see where I'm coming from.
Even if it was like that from the start, you know, like, you know, before they had kids, before they got into this, I guess, situation, right? So it could be that they then, let's say they leave their current partner, they decide to have a full-time relationship with the other person. Let's say they end up having kids, and then they fall, would it be likely that they may fall back into the same cycle of, because of their attachment style, that they fall back into
not
the same.
Not feeling heard again.
Yeah.
It's possible. Having said that, I always advise couples who decided to date or get into a relationship after a breakup or a divorce, I would tell them, please take time. Mm-hmm. Please take time. You know, like, let's reflect what has happened in your previous relationship before jumping into another relationship.
Yeah.
Because we don't want the cycle to happen again.
Yeah. And that is good advice. You know, it brings it back to that, you know, finding your secure self.
Correct.
It's like you need to know who you are before you get into another relationship, yes. You know, because otherwise mistakes will repeat themselves,
sure.
Right?
But I want to answer back to Jasmine's question. Now, we also see another group, the injured partner. After a few sessions, after hearing what's happening in the marriage, he or she will also make the decision, say, hey, enough is enough. I don't think I want this relationship. I don't want to live in a relationship filled with so much betrayal, lies. Mm-hmm. I just want to protect myself and maybe the kids.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He and she would say that, I want to leave this marriage. Mm-hmm. And I respect that as well.
And I mean, for those listening who have never been to therapy, never mm-hmm. been to counseling, like don't even really understand what goes on there, right? It's the big unknown.
Yeah.
What is the effectiveness of couples counseling? How, you know, like how many sessions would they do? Like what is it? Walk us through a typical couples counseling
sure.
journey. Because yeah, I think a lot of folks don't even know.
I mean, I'm more than happy to share. I mean, as I share the statistics, we are looking at a success rate of about 75%. But this 75% takes time. Mm. To be there.
Yeah.
So generally, where
it's not one and done. It's not we walk in with Teresa for an hour and we're better.
No, all right. So generally, this journey, if I'm looking at per session about 60 minutes to 75 minutes, and I see my couples once in a week, you will take anywhere between 8 sessions to 20 sessions or even more, depending on the complexity. So when I talk about complexity, I mean, we are all human beings. Each of us is unique. We are not like a machine or prototype, you see. So this complexity could be, are we dealing with infidelity? That itself is what I call a rupture in the relationship. So I need time to go there just to stabilize the emotions and to repair the rupture. Mm. And that also depends on whether are there any past hurt or injuries, right, that you can't let go of, like any unforgiveness. Other factors will also include, let's say, childhood experiences that shape, you know, who you are or past dating experiences. And sometimes unknowingly, we bring these emotional baggages into the sessions. So I have seen couples from 6 months all the way to 2 years.
Wow.
Just to bring them to a stage where I'm just not just looking at stabilizing, you know, the quarrels or the conflicts, but bringing them to a stage where they can be vulnerable to share the yearnings, the fear with each other. And that's where the connection comes in.
Yeah, and that takes time. You're right.
It takes time. 6 months to 2 years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the issues that people have with coming to counseling, right, mm-hmm. is that they're, okay, so 6 months to 2 years, that sounds reasonable to, like, mm-hmm. repair a deep, you know, kind of a deep cut. But, like, people are like, well, I'm busy. Mm-hmm. I'm working. Like,
all
how
right.
can I possibly squeeze in counseling amid all the other things that I have to do? So how exactly. do you address that?
Yeah, I mean, like, let's look at it. We have three people's schedule to manage.
Yes.
My schedule and the two partners'
parties.
Schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So this is where at the relationship room, we actually offer a 2-day intensive, marriage intensive, where I sit with them for at least 6 hours a day.
Whoa.
Yes. But in these 2 days, the work that we do is equivalent to about 10 to 15 per weekly sessions. Mm. So whatever we do in about, you know, 3 to 4 months is being shortened to 2 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is intensive.
Yeah.
And that's intensive. But it doesn't mean that after 2 days, we have fixed.
Yeah. I was just about to ask, is there like a success rate for like an intensive 2 days? Does that mean, right, your marriage is fixed and, you know, everything's hunky-dory for the next 20 years?
No, but at least for 2 days, I'm hoping to bring my clients to at least what I call seeking the clarification mm-hmm. point of view, or the other part would be stabilizing their quarrels or their conflicts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because in the weekly sessions, what makes a difference is in the weekly sessions, let's say this week I see, you know, my couples. Yeah. And then from this week till next week, there'll be conflicts.
Yeah.
And so by the time I go to the following week, I have to check in with them. Okay, what has happened this week? And they'll spend about half an hour or almost 45 minutes just to tell me about their conflicts.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, if you have a 6-hour block,
yes.
right, that you can kind of get through that part,
correct.
Still a half hour to 45 minutes, but it's just like that one part, and then you can get into kind of
go deep with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any pre-marriage counseling?
No.
No, I didn't either.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It is. Well, for Catholic people of the Catholic faith, right. it's like a thing. Weekend retreat. And I remember this is not a great example. Sorry, Zach. But my brother went on one with his ex-wife. And I just remember thinking that was kind of cool. Like, that's a great idea in theory. Would you recommend that couples do that? Like, do like a pre-marriage counseling? Like,
definitely.
Where they kind of just, I assume, I've not done one, that it's like kind of a, you go through some of your philosophical beliefs together before you get married?
Definitely. And in fact, the interactional cycle, how both of you fight, does not just start on day one of your marriage. It actually started way before
that. Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I'm thinking, I mean, again, for women in our 40s, you know, perhaps that ship has sailed a bit. But I think for women that are unmarried in their 40s, not a bad idea, right?
But you know
what? Find your secure self, go get counseled.
But you know what? I want to say that the Gen Z and the millennials today, they are very open to this. And I've been seeing this group of couples in that generation coming forward to work on their relationships.
Gen Zs are way better than millennials, speaking as a millennial. Their Gen Zs are way better about that. Yeah. They're so open. They all have therapists, right? And then they all use them, which is like something
it's
that's...
Like they are willing to pay for therapy.
Yeah, fair. They see it as a form of self-care, which it is.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Let's talk about sort of, you know, they're the 50s. Older.
Let's say the 50s.
Aren't they the 45s and above?
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. No, exactly right. Yeah, 40. Yeah.
Do you see a lot of them, and do they have different types of conflicts, say, in comparison to millennials?
Okay, the problem is almost the same kind of conflicts, you know, the way they fight, the way they communicate, the way they feel like, hey, you don't love me or you don't see me. But the issues that spark off might be different. So, for example, for the Gen, maybe Z or the millennials will say that, hey, I don't like my boyfriend like looking at another girl in the pub. Mm-hmm. All right. But whereas in the Gen S, it will be, hey, I feel like you're putting your priority on your parents, on your children, but not on me. And of course, there's this comparison, like who is doing more in the marriage?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a second, right? So, okay, you know, I can't remember what movie it was where it was like the two people. Oh, it was, okay, this is like a little known movie, I realize. It's called The Story of Us. The Story of Us.
Okay, oh, right. I've heard of it, but I don't think I've seen it.
Bruce Willis, Michelle Pfeiffer are the couple. Mm-hmm. And they're having I want to say it's a story. But if it's not, folks, fact check me, it's cool. But they're having a fight. And then in this fight, like in the movie, right, it's they're in bed and they're having a fight. And it's like his parents then come into the picture and her parents, meaning like it's like a dream sequence, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like you see their fighting style, the parents, and you see their fighting style. And then you see the couple fighting and you're like, this is why they fight the way they do, because you see the parents, right?
Correct.
And it's like, that's why you fight like this and that's why you fight like this, because they scream at each other and they ignore each other. And then this guy's screaming and she's ignoring, you know, and it's like, that's how it is. How do you see the way that you were raised informing the way that you enter a relationship?
Definitely very important. So it depends how you were being raised. So for example, if you were raised in a family where peace is important, you know, like let's not take out anything that will stir or perturb the relationships, all right? Now, you will come into the relationship as what I call a withdrawal. We have a term for that, withdrawal.
Okay.
Now, it doesn't mean a withdrawal means that I don't want to, you know, talk about problems. It's just that I see withdrawal as or a avoidant technique as a coping mechanism to protect the relationship. Because I know that if I talk about it or if I engage in this fight with you, it's going to sour the whole relationship. Now, on the other hand, we have what we call the pursuer, or what we call the anxious coping mechanism, where he or she learns that I need to fight, I need to beat for connection. When I come to you looking very upset, you know, talking about the issue, not because it's about you, it's because about this relationship and how it's making me unhappy. And that's why I want to tell you so that it won't repeat the second time. So you can see it's a tangle. I have a pursuer and I have a withdrawer.
Yes.
All right. So what we do in couple therapy is I'm not going to change the pursuer as a pursuer. I'm not going to change the withdrawer as a withdrawer. But rather, can we soften the pursuer in his or her dance and perhaps help to encourage the withdrawer to come forward a little bit in this dance.
Yeah.
So that there's still that connection.
dang, I'm like a pursuer. I see it now. Like, I'm definitely the pursuer.
I think I'm the withdrawer.
Okay. We talked about this before, though. Our partners are our opposite. Like, you know, it's like, so yeah, your husband and my husband are the opposites, and we are the opposites. But yeah, that makes sense, though, the pursuer-withdrawer dynamic. Are there other common dynamics that you see?
Generally, it's always following a pursuer and withdrawer.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's like a very
correct
common storyline.
So what would happen then if you had, like, say, two pursuers or two withdrawers? Is it just that, I don't know, like, let's say two withdrawers, for example, would they just not talk about things?
All right. Okay. Generally, we are still looking at a pursuer and withdrawer. But when you see a withdrawer and withdrawer, it could be the pursuer has become a tired pursuer.
Oh,
yeah. And the tired pursuer, yeah, as what you say, has given up. Mm. No point talking to you.
Mm.
And I just don't want to talk to you anymore. That become a withdrawer.
Wow.
I can understand it, though.
Yeah, because it's, you know, like, falls on deaf ears if you are constantly saying the same thing and it sounds like a broken record, don't you?
But sometimes it's also a mask pursuer. So pursuer is not the person who always, like, go yowling and shouting at the other partner. Pursuer is always the one, the first person in the whole dance to say, I am upset. And this could be done by, I give you the silence treatment, or I do something just to get your attention.
Yeah, I see what you mean. So yeah, it's still pursuing. Yes. It just might appear as the silent treatment. Okay. Yeah, I get that. So I still think I'm a pursuer, you know, for the
I think I may change my mind. I might be the pursuer then.
So we've definitely talked about reigniting marriages. We've definitely talked about rebuilding connections. We have not technically talked about kind of restoring hope, which is one of your other slogans. Mm-hmm. What message would you give to women there in their 40s? And when I heard restoring hope, that kind of made me think of some of my really close girlfriends who have kind of given up hope that they're going to find a partner, or even if they have a partner, that it will ever be better. Sure. They're just like, you know, this is my life now and this is how I live. What advice can you give to women in their 40s who are either not yet in a stable relationship or are in one and have lost hope?
I would love to leave this acronym ABC.
Okay.
So A is for acknowledge. Let's acknowledge the pain, the disappointment. Sit with it. Express the emotions. Because when you do that, you'll come to a stage where you can have the emotional closure to say, okay, I've forgiven about what has happened in the past. And this is where I'm able to seek clarity and embrace how I have contributed to the conflict. So for example, in the pursuer and withdrawer cycle, you'll go like, yes, I acknowledge that in the past, I keep yelling at the other person. And when I yell, I use hurtful words to get attention. But to reach that stage is not easy because you have to overcome guilt and shame just to embrace this part. So this is A. Hoping that when you go through A, you know, when you have the awareness of what's happening, you won't bring this into the next relationship. Yeah. B is what I call, let's build the relationship with small gestures. It doesn't have to be a big grandeur. Small gestures, like little things like, you know, let's just give each other a call or even 5 minutes a day to talk, that's enough. Or sometimes, you know, you pass by a fruit store and say, hey, I saw nice apples and my partner loves apples.
Oh.
Just let's do that. Yeah. And that actually builds over time. Now, C is what I call consult, especially when it comes to relationship. You know, just like when we are sick, we are not feeling well, we see a doctor. If you feel like, hey, I'm not at a good space, be it mentally or emotionally, or is it because of my relationship, seek consult with a professional. Yeah. Because I've seen many couples, they, instead of seeking professional advice, they go to TikTok, they go to YouTube and find information. And they start to forward this information to their partners.
Yeah.
And that trigger even more escalation.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, the A, B, C. A for let's acknowledge your emotions and how you have contributed to your previous relationship. B is let's build the relationship with small gestures. And C is consult a professional if need be.
I love that third one. That definitely is relevant in our professions as well, right? It's like you can get all the diet and fitness information you want from TikTok, but I promise you, you should talk to a professional.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, so we have to wrap up here, Teresa. We've loved having you today, but we have to ask you the question we asked every single one of our guests, right? Which is, what is your 40s formula. What are a few pieces of advice that you can give to women in this decade relevant to what you do that can help them thrive?
You know what? I do recognize that women in their 40s at this time, you have achieved many job, you know, satisfaction. But I want to say that not all this job satisfaction is only for a moment, temporary. Always put your relationship, your loved ones, or your marriage as a priority, because they are the ones who will be going to journey with you, ups and downs, who will walk with you till the end of life.
And that's funny because that's just what our last guest
said. Yeah, that is. That's actually perfect. Yeah, so if y'all are listening to our podcast with Adora, we have a very similar message. And it's true, right?
Yeah.
It's like put your money where your relationships are.
Yes.
Right? Your job is only temporary. Oh, thank you so much for coming in today, Teresa. You've given us so much to think about and so much that we can actionably do in our own relationships.
Yeah.
And I think that's really powerful. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, you know, Jasmine and Amanda for this invitation.
Oh, thank you. Our pleasure.
Want more from the 40s formula? Every Friday, we'll be sending our 4Play Friday newsletter direct to your inbox with 4 hot topics, tips, and trends personally curated by Jasmine and Amanda.
All you need to do is visit the40sformula.com and sign up with your email address. That's the40sformula.com. This is Paul, our editor.
He's a 25-year-old unmarried Singaporean guy listening to the ramblings of 12 older women on everything from menopause to weightlifting to sex. So, Paul, what's your thoughts on today's conversation?
Couples therapy. I think it's pretty awesome. So, personally, I'm a big advocate for mental health and caring for that aspect in your life. So, maybe perhaps for the older folks out there, going for therapy, you know, you guys might feel it's a bit more of a stigmatized connotation, but I think of it as something that's a bit more to do with, basically going to mind spa and talking to relax. You know, having I myself gone through it, I think it's something that's good and you should give it a try, maybe sometime. And of course, if any of you guys out there are in need for someone to talk to, don't be afraid to take steps to seek help with a professional. So, yay.
Guys, you know how much we love coffee. And if you want to show us some love, you know you can get us one.
Just visit buymeacoffee.com/the40s formula. Cheers. Before we go, please remember to hit subscribe and take a moment to support the 40s formula by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
Your reviews will help us to reach more people and allow us to continue to bring valuable content. It should only take a moment, and it's a free way for you to support the show.
You can also stay updated with the 40s formula by following us on Instagram at the 40s formula, all one word. We share behind the scenes insights, episode updates, and much more. So please be sure to hit that follow button.
We appreciate your time and support. Thank you for being part of this community. And we'll be back next week for more empowering conversations with inspiring guests.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you so much.
That was wonderful. And like I said, we did have a little pause in there, but we'll just edit it together. I don't think we actually lost anything, Paul. I think it's just that we have to sew it up.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.